This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's time for Emergence News on Plains FM 96.9, citizen-made radio.
Kia katoa, greetings and welcome to Emergence News, bringing you news and insights into esoteric teachings and how they relate to the present day unfolding of events around the world. As students of teachings handed down by Russian esotericist Madame Blavatsky, continued amongst others by Alice Bailey, Krishnamurti and Scottish artist Benjamin Krem, we bring the message that all is well. Despite appearances, everything is working to plan, and our present-day woes are just a birthing pains of a new world beckoning to us from the distant horizon. As global volunteers, we work to share the message brought to us by Benjamin Krem. The esoteric teachings all agree that the second coming of the Christ is a fact that will happen. Krem's message is that the Christ, the great Lord Maitreya, arrived in the world in 1977 and has been living among us as a man among men since that time. He is here with a band of brothers known as the Masters of Wisdom or Lords of Compassion. We are informed that presently there are 14 masters living among us. Eventually there will be 44 who will teach humanity the path laid down by the one in whom we live and move and have our being. Why, you might ask, would we believe the word of an obscure and previously unknown Scottish artist? It's a good question. We have all felt the call and truth of the story, so faith is a factor. However, Share International, the hub of the information gathered down through the years, presents a very convincing body of evidence if one is prepared to research it. For over 40 years, Krem, who passed on in 2016, gave out information given to him from his master and Maitreya. Within days or weeks, sometimes months, or even years, that information would manifest for everyone to see. Three prime examples are: Maitreya says he would create light phenomena around the world, and after that, crosses of light started appearing in windows. Krem was told that Maitreya would create healing waters to help heal humanity. These started to be discovered soon after. The first and most famous one is in Lakoti in Mexico, where today thousands of people queue to get water, and many people report evidence of the potency of their healing powers, which have been documented by volunteer doctors and nurses. Krem talked about a star-like body appearing in the skies, and since then hundreds, if not thousands, of photos of previously unknown, bright, pulsating stars have been posted on the internet. Maitreya gives us these signs to give us hope and to help us keep faith. There is a miraculous world out there, but much of humanity has been captured in the thrall of fear, which prevents us from seeing beyond the toxicity which is surfacing to the bright possibilities which are beckoning. Krem talks at length about how fearful humanity is, and that if we can transmute our fearful natures into love and trust of each other, what a beautiful world we would create. So we thought we would devote this program to the challenge of recognizing and overcoming fear, in the hope that we can lift our attention from the murky to the magnificent. So in the studio today, I've got Peter and Nigel. Welcome, guys.
Hi, hi there, Sophia.
And so tell me a little bit of what you're going to be talking about.
Yes, well, I'm taking this overcoming of fear from Benjamin Krem's Maitreya's Mission, Volume 2, and this is a talk that he gave in San Francisco and in 1989. He also gave the talk in the Netherlands as well. And I think we probably remember that he had a co-editor for Share International in the Netherlands as well, didn't he?
Yes.
And he shared that role.
Okay, so that's great. Lovely, thanks. What about you, Nigel?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that because it's quite a lecture.
Yes.
That presentation by Benjamin Krem on fear. Yes, we're looking at the last program we looked at fearlessness, didn't we?
We did, yes.
Yes, so we're sort of sticking with that theme because it's such a big subject. And it's my task today to have a look at fearlessness and folk heroes and heroism, and looking at how modern day heroes and those in our history, how do they find the strength against all the odds? How do they do what seems impossible or too dangerous? And I really, and just going back quickly to what Peter's going to be looking at, which is really, I think, really exciting, is despite the fear of death, which is indoctrinated into us through our conditioning, through our lives and our education, Benjamin Creme alludes to the possibility of us all learning how to be heroes, learning how to begin the process of overcoming fear so that we don't have to remain crippled or frozen.
Locked into it.
Yeah. Yes. Mm. And I think that that's, yet again, similar to what you just said, Shafir, it's a real message of hope.
Yes.
It is.
Okay, Peter, so let's hear from Benjamin Creme.
Yes, well, this is quite a long talk that he gave, obviously, and but he relies, obviously, on the master that was sort of overshadowing him and also the Lord Maitreya, and also uses Krishnamurti quite often as his source of information. And he says, fear, I suppose, has to be the most obnoxious, destructive, corrosive, limiting, inhibiting emotion in which we are prone. It seems there is nobody in the world except the masters who are free from its grip. We are enjoined to overcome fear, to be fearless. Every teacher of any note who has spoken to humanity, shared his wisdom, insights with humanity, has made this number one priority of living. The question is it possible for us to live free of fear? Can we go beyond fear? And this is what Nigel was saying. Benjamin Creme has an answer there.
He does.
He does. Yes.
Yes. We all think we know what fear is. We may not know how it comes about, but we certainly know what it feels like. There are many different types of fear coming from different circumstances, needs, situations, which we meet in life. Most people, when we talk about fear, will immediately think of the fear of accidents, of death, the natural fears that condition our lives. From the very cradle, we are fed information on which conditions our reactions to all the phenomena of life. And this, I believe, is the root of our fear.
Mm. And it can be a physical response. It can be a psychological response, can't it?
Well, this is right, yes. I mean, the fear of, you know, a car heading towards us when we're in the middle of the road is a very physical one.
Or during a pandemic, the fear of losing your job, the fear of not losing your job, you know, the stress with both options.
Well, I've been trying to retire, so I've been trying to lose my job. But anyway, I know what you mean, Nigel, and I think that I'm just being very flippant here, but, you know, it has affected a lot of people, and there's certainly there's a lot of fear out there. And Benjamin Creme goes on to say, I think basic to every single fear, however subtle, is the fundamental fear of death, which Nigel alluded to as well, which is the fear of life. Every one of us lives under the fear of life itself. No wonder, because we are made of a life, a kind of hell, an arena in which we are gladiators fighting with inadequate weapons, powerful adversaries better equipped than ourselves. We are put into positions in which we feel inadequate, undertrained, underprepared, living a kind of confidence trick to others. I love that.
Yes.
Because we do fool ourselves, don't we? We put on a brave face, go out there, make out everything's fine. Yes, yes. We're just getting high, avoiding too much pain, suffering with fear, and running after, fighting, competing for the pleasure, the security we long for. Why do we long at all? What is the mechanism of longing? Why do we desire that life should be different from what it is? We are trying to make life in an image which we project into the future, and that makes us afraid. It creates the conditions in which the fear is inevitable, because we are competing. And when we are competing, we are in confrontation. There is conflict. Wherever there is conflict, there is fear. We are adversaries in an arena, and we are taught from infancy that this is the natural course. Well, of course, it's not. Now, I love this next bit. Those of us who are parents know how difficult it is to educate a child without imposing our fear of life.
Definitely, yeah.
It's very hard to do.
Mm.
We all do it. I think a child brought up without fear is probably the rarest child on earth.
Yes.
And, you know, that's probably very true. I mean, he's got great insight here.
Mm.
The most gifted child, because it has the greatest gift of life, whether it is money or possessions or not, it is to be free of that conditioning, to experience life as it is without fear, without running after it, without running away from it, without wanting anything at all.
Well, of course, our education system promotes
competition.
And comparison, doesn't it?
And comparing yourself to all the other students. The teachers, like our parents, comparing us to how others are performing. So it's very difficult to spontaneous, to be creative, to be original. And those of us that are, it's despite those constraints of the competitive environment that we're brought up in.
Yes. And you only got a B. Now, you know, Sally down the road, she got an A. What's the story?
Yes.
Why didn't you?
Yes. And you hear about, you know, very academic students, they'll come home, you know, getting 95% for, you know, their school certificate mathematics. And I'm showing my age here by saying school certificate, aren't I? And, you know, sometimes parents will say, well, what happened with the other 5%? Where did you go wrong?
Yes.
You know, that's the extremes that
I know.
The different extremes that we have to negotiate as a child.
Yeah. Well, of course, Benjamin Cribbs goes on to say, look, when he talks about this, Maitreya talks about the self. He says it is the most important thing of life. The self is our immortal being, and the self uses the experience in time and space to realize the process of its becoming. It is possible to change our view of ourselves, our identification, away from these vehicles, the mind, body, emotions, because if we can, we shall set ourselves free immediately from all fear. And he says, there are many techniques we can use which will gradually mitigate the effect of fear. But is it possible all at once to rid ourselves of fear? I believe it is possible if we can come into relationship with ourself as the self and not with that accumulation of experiences which we call me.
And the key there, Peter, of course, is that if we, the better we get to know ourselves, that means that there is more soul contact being made.
That's right.
And that's the ticket here to starting to overcome fear is moving towards the light.
That's right, yes.
I mean, that's what Benjamin Creme
if we can realise that we are an immortal being, we won't, that we die, the body only dies, the rest of us goes on, and it will mitigate the fear instantly of death to start with. And then you start thinking, well, what am I scared of?
Yes.
So, anyway, this is his whole message, really, is to live as the self, to live as the soul, which is the immortal part of ourselves. We are part of God, in whom we have our being, and we will never die. So it's only the body that dies. Thank you very much. This is the Emergence News on Plains FM. For more information, go to shareinternational.org.
Oh, thank you, Peter. That's interesting. So we're going to hear about some heroism.
Yes, well, hopefully, Shafir, over the next few minutes, the examples I'll use and the perspective taken can look at heroism and acting with fearlessness from a traditional and contemporary perspective, including the perspective from a psychology viewpoint. And I'm going to touch on a bit of research that's been done by a well-known American researcher from New York. But let's start up. Let's start by looking at some trailblazers for equality, women's rights. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Florence Nightingale, Joan of Arc, Jane Goodall, Mother Teresa, they're all familiar names, aren't they?
Yes.
New Zealand's Kate Shepherd, recognised as a hero in the fight for women's suffrage movement. Back in 1893, so that's quite a while ago now, New Zealand, here in New Zealand, we became the first self-governing nation in the world to grant the vote to all women over the age of 21 years. And that was groundbreaking achievement. And she wasn't on her own, was she, Kate Shepherd? But she was, and she did have to act in a fearless manner. She was up against the government of the day here in New Zealand, and they were all men.
Yeah.
And it takes a strong will to be
right.
able to dip your toes into waters where you're not supposed to be.
That's right. Oh, no. And I think one of the things I really loved about her was that she did it with great respect for the men.
Mm.
There wasn't the fighting and the, you know, she actually really just changed their minds just by being consistent and being respectful and getting them on side, which I think is a sign of an initiate, isn't it?
It's
a sign of somebody who doesn't have to use
rough tactics.
Not too combative. She was a good negotiator. And, of course, looking at the current situation here in New Zealand and abroad, you know, some of today's COVID-19 heroes, you know, we can look at Jacinda Ardern, Jane Caldwell, Vera Sangui, and Ruby D. Gluzman. Now, all these women have all managed a health crisis while supporting and carrying the trust of those that they are leading. Heroes of the pandemic crisis. They've gone beyond thinking of this as a purely health-related crisis to be managed. These women, you and I can't argue with this, Peter. Women are hardwired to multitask.
Yes.
They know how to multitask. They are perhaps better placed to understand that in a situation like this, we are dealing with not one but several factors, such as economic, social, health, and food security issues.
Mm-hmm.
And women, they are already hardwired to deal with crises like this. The Greek word hero means a defender or a protector, and that's been very much the role of the mother for centuries, hasn't it?
Yes.
A defender and a protector of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Enter the memorable characters in every culture and every age, the stories, myths, and legend. They inspire us and they give us hope. The defender and the protector, the folk hero, has been the platform for many stories and movies, books, texts, drama, and it fills our appetite for an individual or a group of individuals who dare to do what is right, willing to fight for justice, willing to fight on behalf of those who need a voice, who need support and need hope.
And I think the big thing here is it's about service, isn't it? It's about they are willing to serve the greater good rather than actually just doing it for themselves.
Yes, often these heroes, they
forget themselves,
yes,
don't they?
Yes, they forget.
They're not on a mission to
promote themselves.
It's actually on behalf of others, isn't
that's
it?
Right,
which is the mother's role.
Altruistic.
Yeah.
So everywhere you look through history, you will find those who have acted with courage and bravery, risking their own safety and reputation. In my own lifetime, I've seen explorers, sportspeople, politicians, and protesters all act on our behalf for others, for that principle that drives their quest for change. And currently, there are countless examples of people and groups working on our behalf to protect our home, our planet,
mm-hmm.
to protect those who are persecuted. Racism and inequality are obvious examples there. To protect those who are struggling in our society, ethnic and indigenous peoples, the homeless, for example, those who are desperate and lacking their basic needs. Think of those victims of war or climate refugees, and we're looking at the human and the animal kingdom there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the modern day heroes fighting for and are relentless in their struggle to find politicians and community leaders who will finally listen to the voice of the people who are in fact their voters, their employers. Enter those who act with fearlessness. Not necessarily the vigilante or the knight errant or the activist, but those who act with a code of honour.
Mm-hmm.
With an integrity that demands that we do the right thing, not just for ourselves and our family, but right by us all. So let's have a quick look at the definition of heroism. The scientific study of heroism is a relatively recent topic of interest within the field of psychology. Researchers have often offered different definitions of exactly what makes a hero, but most of us would agree that heroism involves pro-social, altruistic actions that involve an element of personal risk or sacrifice. The psychology of heroism might not be well understood, but many experts do believe that it is possible for people to learn to be heroes. So I want to take a quick look at this. Philip Zimbardo has conducted important research on the psychology of heroism and is the founder of the Heroic Imagination Project. And you can look that up online, and it makes interesting reading. It's a non-profit organisation aimed at understanding and promoting everyday heroism.
That's great.
Zimbardo's career and his research, he is perhaps best known for the Stanford Prison Experiment, and that was back in 1971, where, I won't go into it, but it was where 24 male students were randomly assigned to act as either guards or prisoners in a mock prison. And it was supposed to go for 2 weeks, and they had to abandon it after 6 days.
Oh, that's right. They were sort of became cruel jailers.
Yes, this is right. And since that famous prison experiment, Zimbardo has continued to conduct research on a variety of topics, including heroism. And he says a person who rushes into a burning building to save another person is not just extraordinarily brave, he or she also possesses an ability to overcome fear. Researchers suggest that heroic individuals are positive thinkers by nature. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
By nature, they are inclined to think positively, which contributes to their ability to look past immediate danger of a situation and see a more optimistic outcome. So in many cases, these individuals may also have a higher tolerance for risk. Plenty of caring and kind people might shrink back in the face of danger. But those who do leap into action are typically more likely to take greater risks in multiple aspects of their lives. Heroes keep working on their goals even after multiple setbacks. Mm-hmm. Scientists are a great example. Inventors, they're great examples of that, aren't they?
Yes.
Persistence is another quality commonly shared by heroes. In one 2010 study, researchers found that people identified as heroes were more likely to put a positive spin on negative events. Krem says it is possible to change our view of ourselves, our identification, away from the mind, body, and emotions, because if we can, we shall set ourselves free, or begin that process of setting ourselves free from fear.
And he was certainly a great hero himself, wasn't he? I mean, he was looking for a quiet life as an artist.
That's right.
You know, just sitting in his studio doing wee paintings now and again.
Well, he was a good artist.
And he's a good artist. Yeah, but, you know, that's what he is. I mean, he actually took up the cudgel and...
Reluctantly at first,
and then more willingly as time went by, didn't he?
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, who would want to get up and tell the world that the Christ is in the world?
Yes.
And that he's already arrived, you know.
Yes.
I mean, that's sort of...
Well, as you said earlier, Peter, Maitreya teaches detachment from competition, constantly comparing ourselves to everyone and everything. Think about Hercules. You know, there's a great hero, great legend. What did he do? He removed the monster from the cave and dragged after, and it kept multiplying every time it chopped its head off.
Yeah.
Yes.
He dragged it outside of the cave into the light, and then everything changed. And I think symbolically, this is what Krem, this is what Maitreya, this is what many spiritual teachers are alluding to.
Definitely.
That when faced with a potentially life-threatening illness, people with heroic tendencies focus on the good that might come from the situation, such as renewed appreciation for life or increased closeness with our loved ones.
Mm.
So, to finish, I'd like to just mention a couple of quotes that really, they were presented to me in the last 10 days when I knew I was going to be talking about heroism, so I have to use them because because they jumped out at me. And the first one was a Muhammad Ali quote earlier, who was known as Cassius Clay, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his most famous quotes is, he says, "The will must be stronger than the skill." And, of course, that was very helpful when he was dealing with racism and, of course, the civil rights movement.
Mm.
And the other one, which will interest you, Shafir, is with New Zealand being currently in an election campaign, with the election coming up shortly, one of the Maori Party political candidates answered a question which goes like this, The candidate said, "The most widely asked question I receive from young and old alike are, where do I get my strength from? Why do I continue to put myself on the line when the odds seem so against me? What drives me to relentlessly stand for the rights and entitlements of our communities and our people?" And the candidate's response is, "I have always been inspired. I have always been driven by a very special person, a person who stood for us all, a person for whom his service to our people was relentless. He never left our people's side. My hero was Sir Aparana Nata, the first New Zealand Māori Minister of Māori Affairs, the first New Zealand Māori to graduate from a New Zealand university. He was also famous for his work in politics. He was a lawyer. He also worked tirelessly for Māori land development and reform, and his work also in establishing the battalion, the Māori battalion, in World War II."
Fantastic.
So one of the things that Benjamin Creme used to say to us is that there is this prayer, which is called the Prayer for the New Age, which if you said this every day, it helps you to overcome fear. So we thought we might just end today by saying it together and letting you hear it. And it's about us being co-creators with God and becoming really into our power and to our understanding that we are one with God.
I am the creator of the universe. I am the father and the mother of the universe. Everything comes from me. Everything shall return to me. Mind, spirit, and body are my temples for the self to realize in them my supreme being and becoming.
All this information can be found on the Share International website, www.share-international.org. Scorpio Books in Christchurch carries the magazine and some books. And also don't forget the podcasts, which are available on the Plains FM website.
We welcome your comments, questions and feedback. Please contact us at emergencenews@gmail.com.
The opportunity to join our transmission is available Monday and Wednesday evenings and Thursday mornings, which gives us the possibility to do a service meditation in conjunction with Masters.